You're listening to the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. SNCC. In the 1960s, the acronym for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was always in the news, it seemed. More than a half a century later, the group first formed to give younger African Americans more of a voice in pushing for civil rights continues its work. But an exhibit at the Bullock Museum, The Story of Texas, takes us back in time, helping us to see through the eyes of some of the earliest activists. The story of the struggle in the 1960s against segregation, race-based disenfranchisement, and Jim Crow. Maria Varela was there. She was the first Latina woman to document the 1960s civil rights struggle in the Black Belt South. Her work is featured in This Light of Ours, Activist Photographers of the Civil Rights Movement. Ms. Varela, it's an honor to welcome you to the Texas Standard. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
How did you first get involved in SNCC? Were you a young student?
Reluctantly.
Reluctantly, yeah.
Are you kidding me? It was like so scary.
Were you a student at the time or what?
I just left my student years. Yeah, just graduated.
Uh-huh.
And was invited down to work in the SNCC headquarters in Atlanta.
Right.
Which I kept this letter in my suitcase for 4 months. Because I was an organizer for the Young Christian Students, which is a Catholic social action movement. And we were, among the things we were doing in 1960 was talking to students about supporting the sit-ins and the civil rights movement in the South. And then I got this letter from a friend of mine saying, we could really use your help down here at headquarters. I had very good secretarial skills. That's what women did, right?
Is that what you thought you would be doing?
Well, yeah. That's what I was recruited to do. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone. I was like too scared. You know, with between the Klan and local sheriffs and bugs and spiders. I mean, who'd want to do that? One thing led to another, and I didn't really pick up a camera till 1965, because by then I had evolved to doing adult literacy materials, which in my mind, the thing to do was to feature local organizations that were really making breakthroughs, mm-hmm. led by Black people. Because nobody knew about that. And I could do adult basic education books showing through pictures and words Black people making change in their community.
But here's the thing, and I think that this has been said repeatedly, this isn't a new idea, but that the pictures, the images from that struggle were so crucial to the changing of minds in the 60s, and frankly, even today. I mean, when you think about how smartphones, images are being used in current, Black Lives Matter, for example.
Right.
Did you have any sense that by picking up that camera, you'd be sort of assuming a whole new role that would in a way animate?
Well, you ask a soldier in the foxhole if he knows the effect the war is having on the nation or on the world, mm-hmm. because you don't know. You're just there doing the work. And basically, I had no idea. None of us did, you know. And if you're talking about the media's propensity to feature pictures that if it bleeds, it leads, well, yeah. The plus side is it did, I think, shake people up and wake them up. The minus side is that people think the civil rights movement was that. Marches, protests, that was 15% of what we did on any given day, in any given place in the Deep South. In the Southern Freedom Movement was protests and marches. The rest of it was the hard work of building infrastructures that were trying to deconstruct apartheid and Jim Crow laws and make life better for people in the communities. That's what they wanted. So it's a two-edged sword.
I was thinking about the fact that there's something else, another function that certainly photography did, and I guess I wonder how directly you felt this. And it's basically to document the use of force against protesters, right? I mean, were you conscious of that role that you would assume as a photographer?
We were told to do that. Mm. We had an executive director, Jim Foreman, who was trained. He was a trained historian, and Jim really felt that SNCC's work was cutting edge and needed to be documented. And that's why we had 9 photographers on staff. And there wasn't really any other civil rights movement that had that. We had 2 dark rooms, one in Atlanta and one in Mississippi that I had put together and ran. So definitely that was a part of what we were doing. We we did post, we, you know, we utilized the technology of the day. We put these posters up that just flew out the door, and they were all over, not just in college dorms. They were on front porches in Jackson, Mississippi, you know, where Black people pretty much live. It was like a symbol of defiance to put up a SNCC poster. And so our images, we were conscious about how we use them in the Student Voice, which was the only newspaper that came out of the Deep South movement and was distributed all across campuses in this country with images from SNCC photographers.
Let me ask you, when you go through the exhibit today and you see these images, you know, I was thinking about how you were just then describing the way that these images could serve as inspirational, in a sense, right? And actually recruitment posters, in at least to some degree. When you see these images, what comes to your mind?
I think it's that finally we can maybe get this message out that the movement was led by ordinary people, not one strong, charismatic leader. That isn't how the movement was made. It was made by ordinary people, many of them World War II vets, who came home from defending democracy in Europe and on the Pacific Rim, having to get off the sidewalk if white people passed, couldn't get a loan for a business that they might want to start, mm-hmm. couldn't vote, couldn't run for office, and maybe couldn't fully utilize the GI Bill to get into a college that they wanted to get into. And that they started mobilizing. In fact, they were the energy that was behind the Brown versus Board of Education decision from the Supreme Court that said separate was not equal. And these people worked hard most of their life to try and actualize in their communities that separate was not equal. Many of them paid the price for that in terms of losing their businesses if they had any, mm-hmm. not being able to get a job, couldn't get a finance a house or whatever. So this is an intergenerational movement. They were our leaders, these veteran activists. Miss Ella Baker introduced us to her whole network of these folks across the South and said, when you go into a town, you may want to pay your respects to the local preacher and the teachers, but you go to these folks because they have been in the movement for years. And that's where we took our marching orders.
Well, you talk about the intergenerational aspect of this, and I wonder, you know, here 50, almost 60 years later, right? Do you sense that same, do you still feel that sense of intergenerational, of an intergenerational movement? Because, of course, SNCC is still around, right?
It is. In fact, we're having our 60th convening from our 60th anniversary in the second weekend in April in Washington, D.C. We already have like 500 people registered, a lot of them students coming from campuses across the country. Because we all find in our where we live and where whatever we're doing is that we're mentoring young people. Hmm. So we're kind of continuing Miss Ella Baker's role of mentoring because they mostly come to us and say, you know, we feel more attracted to SNCC's approach to organizing. Tell us about this or what about this? Or we're thinking about doing this. So it's a wonderful role to play.
Let's talk a little bit more about the exhibit proper. Is there an image in the exhibit that you would say you feel most, I don't want to say favorite, because favorite connotes something completely different, but is there an image that you believe is most powerful, at least to you?
Well, that's like asking which kid do you like the best.
Of course, but yeah.
I think the one image that I'm always drawn to, and I can't remember the photographer who took it, it's a SNCC organizer walking up the railroad track bed doing his door-to-door, because that was my experience in the movement, was all that organizing that went on day-to-day to kind of build whatever the people in the community wanted. So I think that that's one of my favorites. There are two more that are kind of predictive, I think, of kind of the next phase of the movement, and one is June Johnson from Greenwood, Mississippi, who I ended up in jail because of. We were driving an integrated car going from Alabama to Mississippi. Apparently that was the wrong thing to do. In any case, 2 years later, Miss Johnson at the Meredith March, which was called the March Against Fear, mm-hmm. is holding up this sign saying, I wonder, is white power dying? You would not have seen that sign on the Selma March or any other march before that, because there was a change in consciousness. By this time, unfortunately, many of the media representatives that had covered us in the early 60s had gone on or retired or whatever. And so we had a crop of new young'uns, and they basically were affronted by this. Mm-hmm. They basically saw this as a call to violence. There's another picture that's the companion to this one, which is very close to it in the exhibit, with young men. One of them has a hand-drawn panther on his T-shirt with a marker, just a black marker. And behind him are these men with really resolute expressions on their face. These were the guys that would not join a march in the past because they said, we're not nonviolent. And they joined the march not to be violent, but in a sense to be protective and to assert themselves as saying, you know, it's our turn.
We're out of time, but I want to ask about the role of an exhibit like this, given where the movement that is ongoing, how this plays a role, because it strikes me that there is a bit of a danger anytime you're talking about something that is continuing, being part of an exhibit in a museum, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that a danger, or is there a way that perhaps this exhibit sort of transcends the notion that this is something that happened in the past?
Well, and that does need somebody talking about it, because it's difficult just to make this assumption. But I basically, what I take out of this is that there are three products that came from this movement in terms that I think belong in any follow-up movements. And the first one is representation. Who speaks for the voiceless? And the second one is decision-making. Who decides? And you see a lot of collaboration going on in parts of this exhibit of people working together to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And the third is, who benefits? Because the bottom line is, if the people who started this movement or on whose behalf was started are not benefiting, then it's gone awry. It's strayed from its core responsibilities.
And those are matters that speak to the present as much as they do the past.
Absolutely.
We've been speaking with Maria Varela. She is an activist and photographer whose work is featured in This Light of Ours, Activist Photographers of the Civil Rights Movement, on display now at the Bullock, Texas State History Museum. Ms. Varela, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to speak with us on the Texas Standard. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me.